The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Football Weekly Extra. James Richardson is in Sheffield looking at things, so I'm here instead. My name is Max Rushton, the Colin Pascoe to Jimbo's Brendan Rodgers. On today's pod, we will do these things. Does QPR's win at Chelsea prove for once and for all that the Premier League is the best league in the world? Is this Fergie's best Man United squad ever? We'll guess at some transfer gossip that's almost certainly not true, and we will look ahead to some mouth-watering cup ties. I've had personal requests on Twitter to fill you in on how my two-bed mezzanine flat is progressing, and for some minor celebrity news that may have happened to me since I was last here. We have a panel of two, which I'm very nervous about not having a panel of three, because the equilibrium of it, I'm just used to that. So we've only got two, but we've just got to work with what we've got. You know, it's what happens with a threadbare squad at this time of year. Paul McInnes is here. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too.
Are you well?
I'm slightly congestant in the nasal department.
Okay.
But other than that,
very
good.
Will you be okay?
I'll be fine. I'll make it through.
All right. Good. Jacob Steinberg, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Are you well too?
I am well, yeah.
Sean Ingle sends his apologies. He can't be here because he's writing a piece about a speed skater instead of talking to us. It's not Winter Olympic previews already, is it? Well, we don't know. We don't care, and it probably won't make the edit. Right, we will keep back what we did for New Year's Eve for the top of part two to keep you hooked. But let's start with Stamford Bridge. Shock win for QPR. Was that the most surprising result of the season, Paul?
Yes, probably was. I'm not sure it was the most exciting match or indeed a deserved outcome, but it was definitely a shock result. Particularly when you consider the form of the two teams going into that match over the festive period. I know it was a bit of a aberration, but the football Chelsea played against Villa I thought was some of the best I'd seen all season. I thought Benitez had started to get Chelsea to tick a bit, to perform on a regular, you know, consistent level. And the goals that Suarez scored against QPR were just comical. So, yeah, I didn't expect it.
Jacob?
Well, it was a little bit unfair maybe to criticise Benitez for this, but what the problem I think for Chelsea last night was that they didn't start Mata. And when he was at Liverpool, there were a few games where he would rest key players and they would end up drawing at home. And last night, when he didn't play Mata, he didn't play Hazard, he played Marin and Oscar instead, and Moses as well. They just lacked that fluency, and they haven't actually won a game which Mata hasn't started this season. That's five times he hasn't started, five times they haven't won.
But you have to rotate if you want to almost win the league. You've got to rotate and use your squad, and
yeah,
he's seen
a little bit
how rubbish QPR were against Liverpool. I must have thought, literally, any squad I pick, any team I pick, will win that game.
That might have been as much the problem as the personnel. It's when you send out, it was five changes, was it?
Yeah.
And when you send out a team with five changes, but Marin's first start of the season, and you send out a message saying we can win this whatever we do, then the psychological effect on your team might be just as important. It didn't really look like Chelsea were playing with any tempo last night.
Although QPR have been absolutely shocking, and it's a game you'd expect to win, it's also their biggest game of the season. So if there's one game where they were going to put in more effort than they've shown throughout the entire season, they probably put in more effort last night than combined in any other game this season. Chelsea couldn't really afford, I think, to be so lackadaisical.
Mm-hmm. Did Harry do anything right, or did he just look at the Liverpool game and?
Well, I think I think you might even say that he looked at the Liverpool first half. The second half against Liverpool was an improvement. They were more solid. They didn't concede any goals, and they were tighter to their opposition. And I think yesterday you saw what a lot of teams have been able to do. It is, you know, you get tight and you get narrow and you close down when the opposition come within, you know, 15 yards of your penalty area, because otherwise you've got to, well, like Mata did against Norwich on Boxing Day, you've got to have a good hit to be able to score from there. And that's what the QPR did there. They were very organised, very energetic, and they really stopped. I think there was maybe one or two clear-cut opportunities for Chelsea in the game.
There's also a goal that should have been allowed for Lampard. So they got a little bit lucky there. He was just about level when he scored, when it was 0-0.
And now that every player has played for every other Premier League team, and so no player will ever celebrate. I just find that so awkward when he's really trying to do nothing, Sean Wright Phillips, and all his players are jumping on top of him.
It's going to be 2013's Sloop John B. It's so annoying. I mean, Sean Wright Phillips didn't really do that much at Chelsea. I think they like him, but he didn't really, he didn't do anything at all for them. And it's a huge goal for your team that is paying you thousands and thousands of pounds. So you probably could celebrate there. I don't think anyone would mind.
It's like the pre-match handshake and the badge kissing and stuff like that. It just stinks. No, it doesn't stink, but it smells of insincerity immediately.
And I was going to say that. Do you think any? I mean, how many players genuinely think? It's a bit. I mean, we're going to talk about that T-shirt thing in a moment. I'll get totally confused about when players have T-shirts on underneath, just in the dressing room, when people are looking around. Do you think every player now has a T-shirt saying something underneath, just in case they scored?
Jermaine Defoe, about a year ago, he was about to hit a landmark goal, and he had a T-shirt underneath with the number on it. But you could see it because Spurs have a white kit and you could see the number on it, but he didn't score. I think he missed an open goal in the game.
I have to say that Berbatov T-shirt did kind of restore my faith in the T-shirt message, though. I thought that was witty.
I was jumping the shark for the burb. The best moment of 2012 was Craig Beattie's celebration for Hearts against Celtic when it was the last minute of a Scottish Cup semi-final and he was playing for Hearts against his old club. And he took it, scored the penalty, whipped off his shirt and started waving it around his head and basically went on a lap of honour around Hampden Park. And that's what you want to see when a team's playing his old club.
All right.
Not just standing there doing nothing.
Can QPR survive?
They can. They've still got some tough games coming up.
Is this when your stat comes in? You ran out of the studio.
I ran out to get a stat, I'm not even sure I could interpret properly. There's one thing about finding statistics, and there's a second thing about understanding them.
Right.
But it's just the kind of the midway points total over recent seasons and what was required to get it. And I think QPR are now on 13. And the midway points total in last year was 15 to 17, and safety was 37. 10-11, it was 19 to 20. And safety points was 40. Interestingly here, in 09-10, it's 18-19 midway and 31 for safety. So I think what it's saying is, did you pick it up? I was very, very brief, very concise. Right. There's no consistent law, but I think what it says is we're looking at a low points total to get to 17th. And, you know, you can quite often a team, it was Wigan last year, quite often a team will go on a storming run in the second half and That's a real morale boost to that result, and it will change their mentality.
Do you think they need to bring players in? I mean, is Harry going to buy Spurs?
That's a redundant question. They're quite obviously going to bring players in.
Yeah. They've brought so many players in for so much money.
They need a centre half
and a striker as well.
Do they have the slowest centre half pairing?
Oh, that Suarez goal against Clint Hill, where he just did him over in a 2-yard sprint, won by a yard. It was amazing.
And if Demba Ba had been playing for Chelsea, do you reckon they'd have won?
Quite possibly. I think the most damning indictment of Chelsea's performance last night was that Torres was kept in the pocket by Clint Hill. And as we were just saying, when Suarez played against him, he destroyed him. And Torres, although he had that little purple patch during December, just I don't think has the consistency or confidence to be the man for Chelsea.
I wanted to believe in Torres coming back because it's a joy to watch him when he plays well. But you just thought, you know, if there's ever a game where you might hope that your £50 million striker might, you know, be reliable.
He had one great chance, didn't he?
Yeah.
And he's just trying to blast it. Yeah.
Well, he blasted it.
He actually got a hat-trick in that game last season, which, you know, just shows how bad QPR can be.
And Demba Ba didn't play for Newcastle, and they lost to Everton despite going 1-0 up early to a brilliant League Two goal. I love it when goals in the Premier League are that bad, aren't they? Boot, ball, don't let it bounce. It's like Sunday League.
And that's a really dodgy looping header. Land.
How long are we going to... I bet you've said this on the pod 1,000 times. How long are we going to keep asking how long Everton can maintain this push, and can they keep going to the end of the season and challenge for fourth?
I think... what we saw on Sunday with Everton is sometimes they just seem to get a bit of a nosebleed when they're playing against the top sides. And I think that probably their first 11 is maybe a match for Spurs and Arsenal. Beyond that, possibly there's not they don't have quite the depth. But when they start the season playing so well against Manchester United and then they stuffed Aston Villa, you thought, actually, this side really could finish in the top four, possibly even finish third. But then they went on that little run of drawing loads of games, which they should have won because they missed so many chances and they were giving away stupid goals quite often late on in games. And you just wonder sometimes, do they believe in themselves enough do they believe in that the actual the amount of talent they do have with the likes of Jelovic and Fellaini and someone like Baines as well, Pina. There are so many good players in that side, but sometimes you just think that they don't quite go for it enough. And that would be my worry for them for the rest of the season, because they are a really good side. And that was a huge win last night. It was a difficult game.
It's disappointing that Jelovic has not been... I think he's mullered the woodwork this season, but not really found the back of the net as much as he had done last. And I don't know, and I'm sure David Moyes is a better judge of his abilities than I am, but I wonder about him as a lone striker. Mm-hmm. There's sometimes you have to kind of in that position be creating chances for yourself, and Jelovic is a great finisher of chances. That's why I think it's interesting how effective Aniche can be, admittedly late in games, but when he's been coming on, he has been making a difference. I think again they could do with another figure up front, but whether they've got the money to bring in that quality, I don't know.
Yeah, if they can back him, then I would think they would have a great chance of finishing in the top four. It'd be good to see him do it as well.
You know how everyone says the only England player that would, you know, get in other international teams is it's always Ashley Cole, right? It's just that's the only everyone always says. Oh well, no one else is going to really cut it at any other club. If we believe that, and now we think that Leighton Baines is better than Ashley Cole,
do we?
Can we just go with me for a second?
Okay,
does that mean that Leighton Baines is the best left back in the world?
There, I don't know. You know, you might say something like Jordi Alba or
Philip Lahm,
Marcelo at Real Madrid.
But how good? I mean, seriously,
how good is he?
How good is he?
Yeah, he's amazing. He's playing so well for the last two or three seasons now, and that goal is just out of this world.
And he's one of those players who's kind of built in the. He started with somebody like Ashley Cole. It's like when he started out, it's this sort of he looked like he was a winger playing fullback, whereas Baines has started out as a good bread and butter fullback who's now turned into somebody who you can see kind of doing people inside and out with little back heels and all that sort of stuff, as well as the arsenal he's got in his set piece delivery.
And he didn't even run up to take that. You know, I just think to kick that ball that hard, you'd have to be running really fast. Just everything would go right, but he just absolutely nailed it.
Yeah.
Goal of the season.
I think it's going to take something to beat that, yeah.
Yeah. Cisse did score. They've lost Bar. How much trouble are Newcastle in?
I think they're in quite a lot of trouble at the moment. I think with Pardew sometimes, you see him come into a team and he has a great effect at the start. I thought that he was quite a good appointment when he came in, although people were writing him off and saying, what on earth are they doing? But having watched his West Ham side, I thought he does have something. But last season, although they were very good, there were times, I think, where they didn't really have a lot of control of games and they would win games kind of a bit luckily here and there. They have very clinical strikers in Bar and Cisse, and they would kind of take sometimes a few chances they did create and grind out games rather than absolutely dominating them all the time. But I think this season they've been worked out a little bit. They've become very route one, very long ball, and they're missing Kabay and Ben Arfa with injury as well. But I think sometimes the Pardew's teams, they get worked out and he doesn't quite know what to do with it when that happens.
And I think what you were saying about Everton earlier certainly applies to Newcastle. I think once you get below that first 11, mm-hmm. while there's prospect and there's talent, there's the players like Marvaux, you know, they're obviously not young prodigies, but they still need to be developed. And a relegation struggle is no time to be developing players, particularly when they're not necessarily accustomed to the English football culture either. So yeah,
are they a team that could do that kind of free fall? There are a number of teams that are in that zone that may.
Well, they keep on losing at the moment, and
it's amazing. 8 out of 10.
I think last night made it 9 out of 11 that they've lost, and they desperately need to sign, I think, a couple of players. That's part of the problem. They didn't strengthen the squad in the summer. And that, coupled with the demands of the Europa League, has hurt them as well. They need to replace Barr. I think Cisse is good in the area, but I don't think he offers as much as an all-round striker.
It's so the inverse of that thing that they got when they got the, you know, although Tiote's out of form this season, when they got Tiote for $3.5 million, everybody's going, what amazing value. But they're obviously hunting for value in lower European leagues. And that means you're taking a certain amount of a gamble on a player. And at this window, January window, you can't really do that.
And so frustrating to have a release clause in Demba Ba's contract like that. I mean, is that the only way they got him?
Presumably.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then, in which case, less frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah.
We were trying to think of a clever way to get from the Newcastle game to the Liverpool-Sunderland game. Producer Ben suggested, should Newcastle have bought Daniel Sturridge instead of Liverpool? And I thought about going down the "are Sunderland too good to go down" route. So we'll ask both those questions. Should Newcastle have tried to buy Sturridge instead of Liverpool?
Would they have had the money to do it? I'm not that sort of that 15 million. I suppose Cisse cost them 10, but that seems to me a little bit more of a marquee signing than Ashley would usually splash out for. I'm not sure they need. I think they need somebody with physical presence up front. They could do with, you know, they should have got Andy Carroll back on loan. I mean, that would have made the perfect sense for them at the beginning of the season.
But good signing for Liverpool, Sturridge?
If he remembers that he's 23 and not 18, he has a lot of talent, but I think he thinks he has more than he actually does. But he is skillful. He can finish, but he needs to sometimes learn to pass and remember that he's in a team. Him and Suarez together could be very good.
Wondering how they would fit together.
Well, part of the problem for Sturridge at Chelsea was that he was never allowed to play up front, which is where he wanted to play. They always played him on the right, and you can't see him playing, displacing Suarez and playing in the middle for Liverpool. Again, he's probably going to have to compromise and play on the right or maybe on the left.
I think doing some time as an understudy to Suarez might not be a bad thing for him. I thought it was interesting what Rodgers said, is that it's Sturridge's last chance to prove himself at the top level. And I think he wants to prove himself as a striker. I think he'll get those opportunities when they want to keep Suarez fresh, and it will be up to him. There would be pressurised moments where he has to deliver, and I think that might be what he needs in his career.
I'll have an anecdote here, because I had a trial at Bolton. And I call it a
criminal.
Trial. Well, no, not a criminal. Owen Coyle came on Soccer AM, and I was like, whenever anyone comes on, I say, "Oh, can I do that?" So when Justin Lee Collins came on,
sorry, I said, shouldn't laugh.
"Can I be in Rock of Ages?" He said, "Yes." So I was in it. That was before all of that stuff happened. So yeah, Owen Coyle came on. I said, "Listen, can I come and play with the first team?" And he was like, "Yeah, sure," which rarely happens. And went up there, and I call it a trial just in case I was good. And what was interesting. Two things that are interesting. One, Daniel Sturridge was actually a cut above every other player there. Cahill as well, actually, interestingly. And Sturridge...
In what way, technically?
Just technically, everything, you could just see their first touch was just unbelievably sharp. Obviously, they were all better than I was, but you could see other players who, you know, occasionally they'd miss control the ball every time the ball went into Sturridge. And it didn't matter where it went into Sturridge, he would control the ball. And he was a thoroughly nice bloke. And he said, what was interesting, and I can't remember who was managing Chelsea at the time, that every day at Bolton they played at seven aside, goals with nets, just see who wins. And he was like, "This is amazing." Because at Chelsea, maybe once every 2 weeks, you'd actually have... You know, it was just so much more tactical. I don't know if that was specific to a bigger club and a smaller club, or just Owen Coyle being just loving football because he got to play in those. It doesn't tell us whether Daniel Sturridge will be a brilliant player for Liverpool. But what it does say is, in training, literally everything he hit, just every single thing went in. So I suppose it shows that a player that can be amazing in training and not necessarily translate that to doing the right things on the pitch.
Well, he did the right things on the pitch for Bolton, didn't he? And, it depends on attitude, and it depends on where his head's at, as much as where he fits into a tactical system.
He actually had a very good start to the season last year for Chelsea as well. The first half of the season, he was their best player under VS Boas, but he just tailed off under Di Matteo. He didn't really seem to fancy him at all.
Yeah.
Didn't quite have the discipline as well to play in that wide position, and especially going back defensively.
So after losing randomly to Villa, and I suppose they got humped by Stoke as well, they've beaten Fulham, QPR and Sunderland comfortably. What do we read into that? That they're just an inconsistent mid-table side, or Brendan Rodgers is starting to make his mark?
Yeah, I think you'd have to probably take it with a little bit of pinch of salt, because those three sides are horribly out of form. But at the same time, to score 10 goals and concede none in those three games would have to be encouraging. And again, the fact that Suarez can just destroy any defence on his own, basically. Perhaps they're not quite as bad as people make out sometimes. He's just so good. He can do it on his own, and... although he does need that support, especially in the goal-scoring department.
I'm talking with a mouthful of Haribo here, but I do think you can see with Rodgers that he has had a positive effect on a number of players in the squad. You know, from Raheem Sterling in the early days to the fact that now Downing and Henderson are back in the first team and proving effective. I think he can obviously work with players psychologically, and he can get them motivated. I think the thing you would say about the defensive line is that if you put physical pressure on Liverpool, if you hoof balls at them,
the gummy bears are getting a lot of saliva now, aren't they?
No, I've spat them out. if you put a lot of physical pressure on that defence, they can be fragile, and that's what, you know, that's what both Villa with Benteke and Stoke obviously did against them. And so, you know, I think when you come up against top sides, you know, like Fergie will probably, you know, adjust his system to take advantage of that when they play each other soon.
I don't know what Suarez's contract situation is, but he's so good. Surely he's going to sit there, and if they don't do anything for a year or two.
Where do these players go? They only go to Real Madrid or Barcelona, don't they? I mean,
well, yeah. But he could he? PSG? Or United or something?
Why would you go to PSG?
A lot of money.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of money.
But, you know, he's probably getting a lot of money at Liverpool. Enough. Well, yes, I see. You could get £200,000 a week as opposed to £90,000.
But he's so good, he could play for a side and challenge for a first team place at Real or Barcelona, or could he not?
Yeah.
Rodgers last night was kind of comparing him to Messi, which is probably a bit strong. But there probably aren't many sides in the world who wouldn't want him, and the worry for Liverpool would be another season without the Champions League, without the money that brings. At what point does he start to get a bit restless?
We hear that he's happy though at Liverpool, and I think if they did get in the Champions League, he might well stay.
Sunderland, they beat City, but Spurs could have scored hundreds against them. Liverpool scored three. How much trouble are they in?
Probably not too much trouble. I don't think they'll go down. I think they can be hard to beat. They've got good defence. They've got Fletcher, who, while he doesn't create his own chances, he's a brilliant finisher. And if they can get people like Sessegnon and Johnson playing, which was kind of happening in that little run they had where they beat Reading, City and Southampton, they should be fine.
Right, welcome to part two. Before we talk football, we'll have a New Year's Eve review. Jacob, despite telling everyone on Monday what you were going to do, we cut that. Well, I didn't. I wasn't here, but yeah, Ben cut it. So you can tell us again.
Went to my brother's bar, and because he works there, it was free all night.
Does he own the bar?
No, he works behind the bar. Oh, and okay. Yeah, so that was quite good.
Was it meant to be free all night for you, or you?
No,
you know, you've got the. You
no, the next day he said, I wonder if I kind of pushed that a little bit, but.
And was it a ticketed affair, or you got in for? And other people getting tickets?
I just went on the door and said, "I know Toby, and I said, I'd come in."
All right.
Yeah, he's a bit of a big shot. Yeah.
Okay. Good. And was it busy? Is it too busy? I'm over bars for New Year's Eve.
It was. It was okay. It was okay. Yeah. A nice level.
Not queuing for the gents.
No queuing at all.
That's fine. Was there a man in the toilet trying to cover you in Lynx Africa?
No. No spray. No. What did they say? What is it they say? No spray, no play.
Paul, tell me about your new year.
It's pretty much exactly the same as that. I went to some pub for aging hipsters in East London and sat there and got eight cockles and drank too much lager. But I was home. I was home in time for Jules' Hootenanny. I was home before midnight. My fun was on New Year's Day when I went to watch Dulwich Hamlet play Tooting and Mitcham in the Ryman's.
You went to Upton Park?
I weren't at Upton Park, no.
Oh. I woke up and about 12 o'clock having to go there and was kind of shaking because my brother's quite good at making cocktails.
See, your match report was great as ever.
Thanks.
But it dismissed Norwich in one sentence at the beginning, and you never expanded on why it was so easy for West Ham. So I wanted to know.
What's your brother's cocktail of choice?
I don't know. He just invents them as well. He
oh, really?
Comes up with
what a maverick.
I know.
I was in the countryside. Just thanks for asking.
Were you?
Yeah.
Were you walking your dog?
I don't have a hate dogs.
Fine. Be like that.
No, there were 12 of us. It was really nice. And we played board games. Right, Tuesday's games. Let's start at the top of the league. Man United comprehensively beat Wigan at the JJB. So Alex says this is the best squad he's had for ever or for ages.
I would disagree.
It's the WD Stadium, is it?
Oh, DW Stadium.
Oh, is it? All right. Okay, Tuesday's games. Let's start at the top of the league. Manchester United comprehensively beat Wigan at Wigan. So Alex says this is the best squad he's had for ages. Discuss.
I would disagree with that. I would say the squad he had when they won the Champions League in 2008 was much better than this one, which that squad simply because it had Cristiano Ronaldo in it and also Carlos Tevez and a younger Patrice Evra, a younger Rio Ferdinand, and a younger Nemanja Vidic as well, and Giggs and Scholes.
Okay, so why is he saying that? Because we all know it's not true.
Well, you're not going to say this is the seventh best squad I've ever had. Go on, boys. Go and win the title now.
Well, he's just up in the ante, isn't he? I mean, you know, they look as if they're comfortable at the top of the table. It's the thing about United. They're always... The bad results are so notable because they're such an exception. They're always on the money. They always bring enough to win a game. And they're doing that right now. They're really laying down the gauntlet. They're not even into their usual period where they pull away. This is about where it starts normally. And they're already 7 points clear. I mean, it just looks like just that decision of the number of goals, extra goals that Van Persie will give us will be enough to win us the title just looks like perfect.
Is it slightly worrying that actually Manchester United might walk away with this, and unlike the previous years? I mean, I can only remember last year because I have a very bad short-term memory, but I can't remember a year when you're going to tell me it's 2 years ago it was a walk in the park for someone. But, you know, they might win this by Easter.
I think so. And with a squad that I don't think is as good as Chelsea's or Manchester City's. It's purely the fact that...
I don't know. Why?
Why? Well, I think purely on talent alone. But I'm not sure that the coach. I don't think any of the coaches have been a patch on.
Do you think do you think maybe that Man United's first team is perhaps not as star-studded or as good as City or Chelsea's first team, but their squad has more depth?
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. I think that when City played them last season, they beat them twice, and their first 11 is better than theirs. But United just have more depth and more options. I don't particularly think a lot of the players that come in to replace the likes of Tevez, Aguero and Silva at City.
Is that sort of frustrating that Man United buy these players who are good enough and they're good enough to win the title, but it's not amazing to watch?
Yeah,
you get more excited watching Spurs when they're really flying.
Yeah.
Like that.
Well, that's the interesting thing.
Maybe I'm biased because I kind of support Spurs. But you know,
I may be wrong here. But I've found it interesting with Spurs this season that I think they are managing to find a level of consistency that is unexpected and could well see them kind of crack into the top three.
But United have a balance. They have width and. They can attack you in so many different ways. Whereas with City, sometimes you do know specifically what they're going to do, which is they're going to try and get. It's basically Silva. Can he get through you, or can Toure bulldoze through you? Whereas United have the options to change that. They have people to bring off the bench, which
that's to do with the coach and the fact that they've got a consistent management team in place, which has a project. Whereas if you keep on either having wrangles within the club or changing your coach, like Chelsea. The perspective changes.
The frustration for the Premier League now is that Aguero's injured, the Torres are out for the African Cup of Nations.
And that's only significant for one of them, though.
Well, it's obviously okay. Yaya Toure is out, but that just means you presume that's gonna hit City a lot.
Aguero is so good. I love watching.
But Toure, obviously, he went last year as well, and then won the league. So you know they have the funds to be able to cope with that. But because they didn't do it properly in the summer, they bought Rodwell, Sinclair, Garcia. They don't have someone.
Is there anyone they can get? That's going to improve their scores?
Well, apparently Edison Cavani has signalled his intention to leave Napoli at the end of the season, so maybe if they stuck an extra 20 million on top of the fee, they could get him now.
How do you signal your intent? Is it sort of Thundercats style?
Exactly.
Just throw it up in the
sky.
There's
a picture of him in the paper just going, oh, which looks like he's signalling it just then.
We talked about Spurs. Something I noticed that AVB is doing. They beat Reading 3-1 without Gareth Bale. A bit dicey at the end, but they probably should score more chances than they create. Not score more than they create, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
But they keep changing their centre-backs, which I think is weird for a team right at the top. You know, it's almost like they bring Dawson in when they're playing against an oaf. Is that AVB being smart? I always like to have two centre-backs and I know who it's going to be week in, week out.
The Spurs fans that I speak to, you know, they really want to see Vertonghen play centre-half every single game of the season. And I can understand why, because he looks quality. But I think it's heartening to see Dawson back in the side, because I think he is a very effective Premiership player I don't know what was going on there, but the fact that he was given the club captain and never played seemed to be a little bit odd. So it's good that he's in there. Corker's been coming along. He's also been developing Norton this season, who's, you know, looking an effective Premier League player. So if you've actually, you know, if you're talking about it being a squad game, these players do need to have experience. And over the Christmas period is exactly the time when you would do that, because it's a very intensive time.
It just always seems to me that rotation sort of should happen from the, you know, attacking midfield up.
Yeah.
That's where you can rotate, it's all right.
Sorry to bring Norwich into it, but we haven't been rotating. We've been playing the same 11. And then we got injuries to both our fullbacks. And then we suddenly don't have anybody who's got any experience. Our coach won't trust our reserve left back because the couple of times he's seen him play in the Premier League, he's looked out of his depth. Then we ended up playing two centre halves normally at fullback, and we were in trouble. Whereas, you know, admittedly, Spurs have a much better squad, but they have those options.
And a West Ham question for you, Jacob. Joe Cole.
Yeah, there's an element of romance about it. You know, it's where he started his career. When he when they Liverpool came to Upton Park last month, he got a huge round of applause when he came on. He scored. He didn't celebrate,
which we liked.
Which in that instance, sense, then it's more okay. acceptable. Although he has celebrated quite vociferously when he scored against West Ham before for Chelsea, which again I couldn't really care less about. If you want to celebrate, but it's a bit interesting sign. It's hard to know exactly what to make of it because for 2 or 3 years now, he just hasn't played at all. He's done nothing at Liverpool. You wonder about his fitness, whether he has the pace to play in the Premier League anymore, whether he can last for 90 minutes. Equally, West Ham do need a bit of creativity in the side. But
if you're playing Allardyce's 4-4-2, where do you...
Well, no, it's a 4-3-3.
Oh, you're playing 4-3-3.
Yeah, 4-3-3.
Where does he go? One of the top
right? Yeah, because, again, I'm not sure if he can play wide and... But he's not going to be playing behind a striker because that's where Kevin Nolan plays. He's the captain.
Did he play
he's undroppable.
Under Mourinho when he was most successful?
Yeah, he did. But again, that's six or five years ago. When he could run.
What about the fact that Lampard's out of contract? I don't know if Rio's out of contract. You could get the band back again.
Lampard's never coming back. I think Rio is maybe a possibility.
Who else could you get? McAvenney?
Tim Brakel? Tim Brakel. Julian Dix. He's always at Upton Park.
Steve Lomas.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, he's doing wonders at St Johnstone, so, you know.
Alan Devonshire is bald now.
That is 20 years old. I know. That's not too much of a shame.
It was a huge surprise when I saw a photo of that. That's no slight on him. I just imagine him to have the same hair.
Trevor Brooking could, but... It's an Allardyce side, and he didn't score very many headers. Yeah,
my mate Davo, the Arsenal fan, said after the Southampton game, the Ox is useless. Theo's already had his one good game of the year against Newcastle. It's crisis again at Arsenal. He may just be a pessimistic Arsenal fan, but that result at Southampton, was that telling? Or
it's just they were lucky. Arsenal they were sometimes. Lucky to draw. I'm never surprised now when Arsenal lose a game. They should win, and I'm not surprised when they absolutely stuff a side like they did on the weekend. They're just very inconsistent, and that's kind of because they're the third or fourth best team in the country. They're just that level below Manchester United and City who win these kind of games. I think maybe sometimes people get a little bit too excited when Arsenal do one or the other. I think it's just Arsenal.
Saints have also been a little bit more steady and predictable, particularly since Jack Cork came back in the side.
There's a lovely goal as well that got disallowed, that shouldn't have been disallowed.
It was for a push, Ramirez. Wasn't it? It was one of those little challenges that was a foul but probably shouldn't be given as a foul.
Mm, didn't think there was much in it, though.
Can you tell me a transfer that might happen in the transfer window? You can make it up if you like.
Nicolas Anelka's at QPR.
Oh, good.
I'm just reading that off the Daily Mail, though. So
that's fine.
Is this what's his... is it Tristian, some guy that Chelsea are going to pay $15 million for from Metalurg? Some Brazilian who used to play at Internacional with Oscar.
Yeah. Do we know anything about him? Height?
4'2".
Okay.
Only one leg.
Left-handed,
right-handed.
But boy,
is that leg nippy. Okay. Ambidextrous.
All right, good. Well, that'll do for part two. In part three, the magic of the cup, my flat and my celebrity news and some other stuff. Welcome to part three of Football Weekly Extra. Fellas, would you like a quiz first or a small anecdote about my flat and minor celebrity news?
Can we get the anecdote out of the way?
Get out of the way. It's just because people on Twitter,
that's what it is.
The first time and it just Barry just started baiting me and I took the bait and I've got abuse ever since. So in my flat news, I have devastating news, is that the whole front of it is falling off.
Oh no.
Yeah. And you need the front.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
So that's where people make judgments.
Well, you need the back, but the back is fine, but the front is going to fall off. And I've got a quote for a devastating... This is why you should never... But if you're thinking about being if you're in a first-time buyer position, just rent, because then it's not your problem. And it's a leasehold, and I don't understand... No one knows who's got the freehold. No. I mean, no one knows. Like, literally, it's just impossible to find out these things.
What about the microwave?
Well, that, on Christmas Day...
you couldn't tell I'd been fed that question there, could you?
You were teed up. On Christmas Day, I delegated the Christmas pudding to Auntie Gay, all right? And so she arrived and she said, have you got a microwave? I don't have a microwave. I don't have enough surface space. Mm. And flat one and two were away. So my third point of call is to ring Trevor Nelson.
You're kidding me.
So
Trev, can I borrow your microwave, mate?
So I precisely that. I said, Trevor, can I borrow your mic? Have you got a microwave? He went, I've got a spare one. So I know that
that's
is
high rolling.
So I went round to Trevor's house and I borrowed his spare microwave and used it. And then when we sat down, hang on, when we sat down for dinner, there was a 2-year-old. I had not factored 2-year-old into chairs. Had 10 chairs, needed an 11th. Phoned Trevor again. I said, Trev, can I need a chair? Borrow a chair. He said, fine. So I went round. He lives 2 doors down. I went round and he was playing, he was listening to very loudly the Trevor Nelson's One Extra Christmas Day Special. That's the end of the anecdote. Here's your quiz. Okay. Which former England international is today starting his first managerial job at Norwegian club Sarpsborg, who've just been promoted to Norway's top division, founded in 2008 with a stadium capacity of 5,500?
Kenny Sansom.
No. Who do you play for?
West Ham.
Jeff Hurst.
Leeds.
The ghost of Bobby Moore.
This is not. This is in no particular order. In no particular order, he played for West Ham, Leeds, Sunderland, Doncaster, Sheffield United, Leicester and Middlesbrough.
Brian Dean.
That's the end of the quiz.
Hey.
The rest of the clues were also played for Benfica and Perth Glory, was once transferred for £2.9 million when that was a lot of money, is a sports consultant for Black Solicitors LLP in Leeds and scored the first ever Premier League goal.
The Dean Machine.
The Dean Machine. Good luck to Brian Dean at Sarpsborg. Right, let's talk about the FA Cup, the best cup competition in the world, the envy of the earth. A form book goes out of the window and it's romantic. Anything can happen. We're looking for a banana skin. I've written down some fixtures which might be banana skins. Brighton v Newcastle.
I'm going to that.
I am?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and Brighton won it last season in the fourth round. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 1-0. It was a Mike Williamson own goal after a brilliant chinking run from Will Buckley, who is a very big talent.
He's a really good player, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Is he going to move from Brighton? How good could he get?
He's only, I think he's 22, 23, so he's developing still, but yeah, he's a good player. Yeah, I like him.
2 defeats in 10. They're 9th in the Championship. What do we think? We'd go through them. Who's going to win that?
I would not be at all surprised if Brighton win that, given what happened last season and given how Newcastle are playing, given the injuries they have and the situation with Demba Ba.
I can see Newcastle winning, taking sucker from that result and then going out and losing the next 3 in the Prem.
Villa Ipswich.
Ooh. Ipswich have started to get a little bit better. The last time I saw them play, they'd lost 5-0 to Palace. It was Mick McCarthy's second game. They were bottom of the Championship, and now they're kind of...
The 19th,
yeah.
They have conceded more away goals than anyone else in the country.
Yeah, they're not very good. It's a heroic return, I think, for Nigel Riococca at Villa Park.
The Nigel Riococca derby.
Yeah.
Villa have got good cup form this season.
Mm.
So Villa.
So we're not giving Ipswich a chance then. Palace Stoke.
Will Zaha play? Wonder if he's been linked with everybody.
Where's he going to go? Spurs?
No idea where he's going to go.
Okay.
But yeah, everybody wants him.
It's interesting that there's been a few rumours about United. Usually when United get rumoured to
a player. He played when Palace beat them in the cup last season. He was very, very good. That's when everybody starts to take notice of him, and they've remembered that obviously.
In fabricating a rumour about it?
United have remembered it, but he is going to be a star. Already is, really.
Do you think Stoke, I mean, if you're drawn against a Premier League team, I almost really wouldn't want to play there.
Yeah.
Because they're actually really good and sort of, and I reckon they can mix it like a championship
side. Free-flowing Ollie football is probably just not the type that's going to...
So Stoke are going to win that
worry
one.
Worry Stoke on Julie, no.
Fulham Blackpool. Berbatov is the best player in the Premier League. Do we agree?
He's the most entertaining player in the Premier League.
I'd pay to watch him control a goal kick. I really
most
would.
Most entertaining player in the Premier League. More entertaining than Suarez.
Yeah, but Berbatov just has that charm about him, that urbane air, you know. The Berberotica.
Berberotica. So most Berberotic player.
Blackpool a bit rubbish this season.
Yeah, Fulham.
So Fulham will win.
Okay. Man City, Watford. Struggling
Watford.
Now.
Watford. No. Zola, though, they're doing quite well. They're actually doing well. He's doing a good job at Watford. I think they are sixth. You know, two former Italian teammates as well, Zola v Mancini. One who wears a scarf and the other who smiles all the time.
But this is City's last chance of silverware, isn't it? Probably.
No. No, just on City, they were 8 points behind with 6 games to go last season. They're 7 points behind with a half the season to go.
They could still win the league.
Yeah.
But they would put any more importance on this? Or is winning the FA Cup a good season for City, or they just don't care?
No, they don't care. I mean, they probably do care, but it doesn't matter. It wouldn't alter the perception, probably amongst the fans even, but certainly amongst the media and probably amongst the owners.
They've already won the FA Cup under Mancini, so it's done, it's gone.
Don't care, gone. Filthy, dirty Peterborough against Norwich.
What?
I'm a Cambridge fan. Have you ever been? And
Do you have a big rivalry with Adrian Durham then?
I have a big rivalry with Adrian Durham.
It's a pernicious rivalry.
The Mail's outspoken new columnist.
Yeah, it's very good.
Is he?
Yeah.
I did ring TalkSport once when he was saying the thing that was wrong with football was Soccer AM feature Skill School, where young kids get to show how good they are at football, but they celebrate by occasionally like pulling their trousers down or something stupid. And I phoned up to suggest that there were other things wrong with football.
Did he think it was immoral or something?
I don't know. He was just saying they should not be given the limelight until they've won the World Cup.
Yeah, right, okay. But he just says the first thing that comes into his head.
Yeah, okay. So I rang to. But it's not
that
a rivalry.
In itself is a skill.
Yeah. I think he's quite talented.
Yeah, no, like, I think he's good as well. Yes, so Norwich, are you nervous about that?
I mean, I really hope we play. You know, our team are knackered. We can do with a break. I really hope we play a second string, which could mean I think we might get a 1-0 scrappy win. Although Peterborough, despite being, you know, rooted at the bottom of the table, have pulled out a couple of results over Christmas, I think.
Cardiff away was the big one, and they had that 5-4 against Bolton.
Get in, get out, stay alive.
Yeah, I think we'll scrape something.
QPR West Brom is just it's not a banana skin. It's just the next fixture I've got written. I've only got four more left.
QPR,
don't worry, I'm not going through the whole third
QPR and the Harry bandwagon keeps rolling on.
Okay, they'll win every game for the rest of the season. Yep. All right. Tottenham Coventry, 87. Ooh,
Keith Houchin, header in the 90th minute.
Yeah.
Diving, yeah. He's just going to come diving in from the stadium. You're not going to see him.
It was last minute of extra time. They're going to sign Houchin and just bring him on and just sort of...
No, they're not going to sign him. He's just going to fall out of the air. Diving in. Brilliant header.
Coventry got no chance there, have they?
No.
No.
No. And West Ham play Man United. And we were looking at that. It was the FA Cup when Di Canio scored.
I was there.
You were there?
I was there.
And Lampard was offside, apparently.
Right, but it didn't matter because...
He wasn't interfering?
No, the ball wasn't played to Lampard.
And Barthez just stood there with both his hands
hanging his taxi.
Barthez just... It's brilliant. If for anyone who doesn't know what happened, it was... This was my PIN number for a while. It was 2801, 28th of January 2001.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was it your PIN number for... Is your PIN number for absolutely everything, I presume?
Yes, that's
tens
what...
Tens of thousands of people know that down.
Yeah, that's not what it is now. So don't try anything. West Ham went there. They lost every single game they played at United for about 15 years. It was fourth round in the FA Cup. And they played against United 3 weeks earlier in the league on New Year's Day, had been stuffed as they always were. And the season before, they had lost 7-1 at Old Trafford. Anyway, somehow they managed to stay in it for 75 minutes, 76 minutes actually, and then 14 minutes to go, Canute put Di Canio through.
Oh, he goes through. Was a good player, wasn't he?
He was a very good player.
He was every bit as good as Henri, anyway.
And Di Canio went through, and he was actually not on a great angle, but Barthez just stood there with his hand in the air, like he was hailing a taxi trying to put him off. And Di Canio just went, you basically can't kid a kidder, and and just poked it in, and somehow they held on. And then lost to Spurs at home in the quarterfinal, so it didn't really matter. Every time they played Barthez, he just used to be greeted by the entire Bobby Moore stand waving at him.
That's nice.
It's a question, though, isn't it? I mean, they didn't win the trophy, but everybody remembers that result.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it was about. Yeah, you have it on DVD?
Yeah.
What other games do you have on DVD? Have you ever sit down to watch a whole game from 15 years ago?
A bit sad like that, yeah. I've got Holland Argentina from the 1998 World Cup. It's a good game.
That is a good game.
Yeah.
But what? Like, what? At what point do you go, that's what I'm going to, you know,
that's what I'm going to do?
So you flick past 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, and then you just...
You've obviously started on Sky, which is a wonderful broadcasting organisation.
What is this about? Are you on... Is this a little commission thing for you?
I have to drop it in. The people on the blog love talking talking about it. What situation in your day do you go, do you know what
usually
I need to
in the
watch?
Afternoon where I've got absolutely nothing to do and I've got a day off and, you know...
And
you
just Doctors is finished.
Yeah.
Just to get you from Doctors to Countdown.
Yeah, and Friends isn't on or something. Right. Well, Two and a Half Men's not on, so you know, what are you going to do but watch?
Do you go, oh, I love this bit. Come in, I love this bit. It's all right for the goal, but, you know, that other bits where, you know, John Moncur misplaces a pass, like, how exciting.
Yeah, but it's interesting to see. And also, the good thing about, I've got this, there's this website where you can get these DVDs, and it's just someone who's recorded every single
ever. Oh, yeah. Brilliant. Oh, that's better.
But you get the adverts from like, 1996 sometimes.
And Elton Wellesby? Is it Wellesby? Who's hosting?
It's Keys.
It's Keys, is it?
Yeah.
All right. Exciting.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go Sunday. Swansea-Arsenal.
Swansea.
All right. And Mansfield, Liverpool.
Liverpool.
What's the... Do we know what the pitch is like? What's the surface like in Mansfield?
Probably quite bobbly.
It's boggy, isn't it? Bobbly and boggy.
Put Joe Allen off his stride.
You know? Might do.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, Suarez against Mansfield.
Suarez won't play, will he? That'll be a game for Sturridge.
Sturridge
against Mansfield.
Yeah.
He
can make his debut.
I'm sort of picking up my papers and chucking them at the end of a news broadcast. So that's it. What's your afternoon, Paul?
Well, I've got to write about GQ's best and worst dressed men, and then I've got to do my day job. Oh, basically, I'm moonlighting.
I saw that Matthew from Downton is the best dressed.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Well, this is the thing. I'm trying to work out what the difference, because like Wigo is like 30. And I would have said that if you're going to go for kind of somebody who's made a sartorial impact, Wigo and his mod tailoring style would be up there, but he's number 30, and some guy who just seems to dress in a suit and have a bit of flyaway hair. I'm not quite sure.
The best dressed in Downton, I don't think.
Controversial.
Yeah. I'm doing a Downton Abbey 1,000-piece puzzle that someone gave me for Christmas. It's bloody nightmare.
But they like it on Comment It's Free, because on the second worst dressed after Ed Sheeran is John Cruddas, the reformist trade unionist of the Labour Party. So they it over
but
there.
But I mean, you know, he's not there to be well dressed.
No, exactly. He wears a suit. I mean, you know, that's a step up from what you might expect.
I dream of what Bunday being in the best or worst dressed.
I don't dream anymore.
No. Start dreaming for 2013.
Okay.
How about you, Jacob?
Do I dream?
No. What are you doing later?
Just doing some writing.
What are you writing about?
Joe Cole.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about him?
Just about his move back to West Ham. Don't know what I'm going to write yet, though.
Memories.
Yeah.
An honest question from producer Ben. Does Joe Cole own a cab firm in Camden?
Yes. Yes, he does. Because when I used to do the football diary back in the Dizog, he registered it, but his dad runs it.
Thanks. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't know when I'm back, you know, some point when Jim goes skiing
February,
or something.
Yeah,
I think so. Maybe February. I'm off to the National with my parents to watch a matinee. Lovely, yeah.
You don't even know what you're seeing, though.
No idea. It'll be good, though. Simon Russell Beale's always in it, spitting everywhere. See you sometime. Jim will be back for professional broadcasting next week. Bye.
This week on The Guardian Audio Edition, supported by audible.co.uk, Syrian rebels sidetracked by the scramble for spoils of war, Beijing spends $1 billion to get China rocking, and Werner Herzog reflects on a life in film. And in our audiobook review, we bring you the debut novel from a writer of comics who converted to Islam in G. Willow Wilson's Aleph the Unseen, and a globe-trotting journey in Benjamin Gilmore's Paramedico. To download or stream The Guardian Audio Edition for free, go to audible.co.uk/guardian or find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. The Guardian Audio Edition, a new way to get the whole picture.